Good morning. Ooh, good morning. Actually, I'm gonna try a new one on you this morning, real quick. For any of those guys who are liturgical and Lutheran out there, the Lord be with you. thank you. I was doing three weeks ago. I was doing a training with a bunch of Lutheran pastors. And we were meeting together, and I was doing some teaching for a while. And then I broke them into small groups, which is a really bad idea to get a bunch of Lutheran pastors in small groups, because I had them doing some discussion questions, and they were just talking away. And I was like, okay, it was time to get back. I'm like, okay, let's all come back together. And they're just talking away. And I'm like, okay, how about we get back together, and let's talk a little bit about this together. And they just kept on going. And finally, a pastor guy next to me, he leaned over and said, hey, Kent, he said, just say the Lord be with you. I'm like, really? I said, can I say that? And he goes, yeah, just say the Lord be with you. So I was like, the Lord be with you. And I'm not kidding you. It's like conditioned into their minds. It's like, and also with you. And I was like, I can do this? And they're like, yeah. They're like, priesthood of believers, man, you can say that. I'm like, okay. So it's a new thing that I learned. By the way, I'll tell you this, though. It does not work at home. I came home, and Nancy and I, I was telling her about that. We were laughing. So I said, hey, honey, so like anytime I need your attention, can I just say the Lord be with you? And she said, you know, Ken, I grew up Quaker, and the liturgical stuff doesn't work for me. So, you're on your own. So anyway, if you're with a bunch of Lutheran pastors, just know the Lord be with you is your key in, okay? Hey, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Kent Shornack, and I actually work at Grandview University, oversee leadership and counseling over there. We keep an eye on Grandview students. We had a lot of Kellys over there I had to keep an eye on, but so I work there, and then my wife and I actually also counsel in private practice, and so we counsel outside of the work that I do at Grandview. And I was trying to think, if it was maybe back in June, your dad, Dave, was teaching on different faiths, and he was talking about the Christian faith and the Muslim faith, and as we interact with people, just how to understand our faith and the principles of it, as well as just understanding some key teachings and principles of other faiths as well. And I had emailed back and forth with him. I said, Dave, I just really appreciated his teaching. But my one comment that I said back to him is, you think about how you talk with people. And I'll put a little slide up here. I just said, you know, one of the things I think a lot about is how we hold our beliefs is just as important as the beliefs that we have. And for me, unfortunately, a lot of my time is spent with people who on the outside counseling, and a lot of people have been hurt by the church or people of the church. And usually it's not the teaching or the faith, it's just kind of how relationally they felt engaged with. Or at Grandview in particular, with a lot of students I'm engaged with, just the struggle of, again, it's not so much the message of Jesus, but it's the messengers sometimes, or at least how they've construed that. And of course, it's beautiful stories as well. But the idea of just how we hold our beliefs with people is just as important to me as the beliefs that we hold. And so I had mentioned that to Dave, and of course, now I get to teach in front of you, I guess. but it makes me think of this. I'll just read this to you. But this very familiar passage, and I love the way it's written in the Message in 1 Corinthians 13. It's very familiar to you, but it says, you know, if I speak with human eloquence and angelic ecstasy, but don't love, I'm nothing but the creaking of a rusty gate. If I speak God's word with power, revealing all his mysteries, making everything plain as day, and if I have faith that says to a mountain, jump, and it jumps, but I don't love, I'm nothing. If I give everything I owe to the poor, even go to the stake to be burned as a martyr, but I don't love, I've gotten nowhere. So no matter what I say, what I believe, what I do, I'm bankrupt without love. And so that's what I want to talk about a little bit this morning with you guys. And I just want to offer you four categories to think about. And they simply are, when you think about relational access, I want to talk about humbling, I want to talk about entering, I want to talk about knowing, and I want to talk about loving. And as you can see, I have a qualifier down there. It says Kent and Buzzard qualifier. And Dave knows nothing about this, I promise. My qualifier is, you know, I counsel for a living, so I talk about a lot of this stuff. But I'll just tell you, my sharing with you comes just as much out of my failure in relationships as it comes out of things that I've learned. And so I stand before you as one who's had to live in that tension of both what I've done well and what I haven't. The buzzer qualifier. I remember, this is actually a term in our household. This is like, and I've never shared this with Dave, but it's years ago, I think it was a sharing Sunday, Dave got up and he was talking about a friend of his that became a believer that he had been talking with for years. And he was excited because his friend became a believer, not because of him, but because of someone else who shared the gospel with him in a way that Dave said, and I would never have shared it that way. So he'd been talking with him all this time. Someone comes in, does it all the wrong way in Dave's mind, and yet the guy becomes a believer. The point is, I'll offer you these categories, but with God, who knows? You know, sometimes we try to do things in the right way, but just the way God's Spirit works, I'm just saying these are categories to think in. But they're not the categories. These are some categories to think in. So, okay, you with me? Here's what I'd like you to do just for a moment. Just take a few seconds. But what I'd like you to think about, when you think about relational access, I would just like you to take some time just for a moment and think about a person or think about a group that you wish you had more relational access with. And so that could be a child that you have. Maybe you're just really burdened for the lost. It could be a political group. Maybe you're like, all those Democrats, all those Republicans, they really need God, and I need to get to them. It could be the gay community. It could be your spouse. But take just 10 seconds and just reflect for a moment. See who God brings to your mind, and then I'll pray. Okay? Father, I thank you for the relationships you bring us. I thank you that you don't leave us unequipped. And I thank you that your Spirit intervenes for us and engages in the ways we do things well and engages even in the times we don't do it well. And I just pray for the relationships that come to our mind and ask God that you would help us just think about how do we engage them with your heart and your love to have access to them and care. We pray in your name. Amen. All right. So humbling. Think with me just a minute. What kind of like thoughts or images come to your mind when you think about the word humble? Humbling. And just throw a few out to me. What comes to your mind? And don't be humble that you can't share anything. Hard. Humble is hard. Yeah. What else? Failure, vulnerability, a couple more. Humble, humbling.
Not recognized.
Not recognized. The opposite of Jim. Everybody look at Jim. Think the opposite. Yeah, okay, thanks, Jim. Yeah, I bet. One of the images that came to my mind is just the idea of making yourself small. Not that you're a small person, but making yourself small. And I don't know about you all, but I like to hike, and I like to go in places like this sometimes. And I don't know if you've ever been, have you ever had to go through like a cave or a place where it's tight and you have to make yourself small to kind of get access and to get through? And oftentimes, again, humbling to me is a category to think about when you want to have relational access with people. One of the places or ways to think that I want to encourage you to think is, what does it look like to be humble? What does it look like to make yourself small to have access? Okay? And it reminds me of this Philippians 2 passage that a place that I fall back to a lot again and again. It just says, in humility, value others above yourself, not looking to your own interests, but to each of you, to the interests of others. in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset of Christ Jesus, who being the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking on the very nature of a servant, being made in the human likeness. Okay? And this is a little paraphrase, a little bit. Diane Langberg is a trauma counselor that I really enjoy reading, but she said, you know, the one who would lead, or we could say love, the one who would lead broken and suffering humanity would do so by leaving heaven and eternity, emptying himself, taking on the likeness of a man, and come in the form of a bondservant. And then I love this last line. The infinite gathered himself up into a womb. Is that like amazing to you? The infinite gathered himself up into a womb. He became small and he became humble so he could, you know, walk in and be humble to enter into our lives. And so, fun fact about me, I don't know if you know this, it may come as a surprise, may not. I actually used to do clown ministry. I used to train students, young students, in clown ministry, right? And that didn't have them speak, but I had them kind of to mime things. And used to actually take trips, took some students to Chicago, New York City, Mexico. And but one of the things I did, I worked at a place that was for severe and profound young children. And I had some students who were doing clown ministry. And there was a young boy about 8 laying on the floor, right? And one of the students I trained, she got down. The boy was laying on a mat, just looking. And she got down and she just laid down on the mat right next to him. And he smiled. She smiled. He turned. She turned. And she got low with him. And all of a sudden I looked over and I saw a staff person just weeping. And I went over and I said, What's going on? And she said, I've never seen in all my years working with this young child just the responsiveness and the reaction by someone who got low and engaged. And that's kind of the idea. We're kind of in an interesting spot right now. We're watching, Nancy has a cousin who's the same age, 39. Something like that, and she's about 39, beautiful. And anyway, she's been an atheist her whole life. She went to church growing up, and she would say by age 12, she's like, I just kind of knew I was an atheist. And she's brilliant, and she's studied, and she's thought, and she's hit a place in her life now that she's a little bit older than 39. She's just had a lot of health issues. And I'm watching my wife engage with her, and what's interesting is Sandy is asking questions, and she's curious about faith a little bit, and her family's excited. It's like, oh, Sandy's kind of she's talking about faith kind of things, and some of the family's like, okay, hit her with the gospel. You know, this is your chance, you know, get in there. And yet I think about, there's a guy by the name of Parker Palmer who I really like. He just talks about how, you know, the soul is kind of like a wild animal. It's timid and it's shy. And if you just go crashing through the woods, you'll scare it off. And so I'm watching Nancy as she kind of gently works her way in relationship with her cousin. And her cousin has asked about, you know, books Nancy reads and things like that. And I've watched Nancy say, well, I can share with you books, but I want you to understand that I read it from a Christian perspective, and so I need to know if that's, you know, okay with you, or are you all right if I share those things? And then as she approaches, I just watching her cousin just respond, because Nancy's willing to kind of humble and go low and to wait for her. So humbling. I'll just say this too, when you think about humility for me, the biggest thing that's a help to me is remembering grace. And so if we're talking about humbling, I think it's fed by grace. And so I just like this quote. This is from a devotional by Paul Tripp. But he just says, you know, when you quit celebrating grace, you begin to forget how much you need grace. And when you forget how much you need grace, you quit seeking the rescue and strength that only grace can give. And I don't know about you, I don't have a story that has this kind of wild living, prodigal story, son, before I met God, much the elder brother story, but as I get older, I'm realizing more and more how much I've been rescued. How much I've been rescued, and when I grasp that, it just feeds humility for me to talk with people. So, okay? Relational access, so humbling. Entering. The other word I want to pick is entering. And I don't know if you can see this. Nancy saw a slide, and she's like, what is that? And this is actually, there's a pathway in the back, and I don't know if you can tell, but there's just a lot of different ways you can go. There's some places you can access that kind of go toward things of the light, and there's some places you can access and choose to go that go toward things that are like dark caves in there. And I think the question that I think about when I think about relational access is the question, am I willing to enter in? Am I willing to enter in into another person's story? And be willing to go into a place where I don't exactly know where it's going. And will I be willing to kind of walk in there and enter in and try to know? And it made me think a lot about, you know, not only that quote about the infinite gathering himself up into a womb, but God entered our lives that way. But I just thought how much God enters in into story. And, you know, the Genesis story, I always just think is such a funny story, you know, with Adam and Eve after they have sinned and they hide. And I swim in the cool of the day. You know, God's going, you know, where are you? Which is just an invitation. It's a way to enter. I was thinking about that, like when my kids played hide. You know when your little kids play hide and seek and you know where they're hiding? You know, and you're telling jokes because you want them to giggle and ha, 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 ha. But it's an invitation to engage. And so God engages. And that question of where are you is such a beautiful engagement because in the midst of their shame, God wants to talk. He wants to enter into the midst of shame with them and talk and be present with them. Same thing, you know, I love the questions of Jesus. And you think about Bartimaeus, the blind man, or the woman at the well, the guy who had the boy who was possessed. And Jesus' questions are, you know, well, do you want to get well? He's wanting to gauge and enter into there. So do you want a living water? What do you want me to do for you? And so Jesus is asked these questions to be willing to enter in. And again, he's the Son of God, so I guess he knows where it's going, but I don't know where it's going. And are you willing to go in places you don't know where it's going by those kind of questions? Oh, skip this, reads like you to me. I love the proximity, the message. you know, the word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. And I just love that idea, moved into the neighborhood. And that's entering in. When I was just out of college, you know, white Iowa-raised Des Moines young guy, went to college at Central College in Pella, and I moved to New York City. And I had a job where I worked in a homeless shelter, actually lived in a homeless shelter in a church, a rundown church. They gave me a bed in an attic upstairs and a dresser with a window in the room, about 8x10. And in the basement of that church, we had about 15 homeless guys. And we would do life together. They'd have a bed during the day. My shower was their shower. My kitchen was their kitchen. And we swapped stories. And we talk about life. And, you know, growing up in Iowa, I didn't have a lot of experience that way in New York City, let alone New York City, right? But sometimes when I come back, I have people ask me questions, or I was asked to speak at a couple places and tell stories, and I just realized that the stories that I would tell were just totally different now because of proximity. I was able to kind of be in their neighborhood and their world and enter in. And so, again, relational access, humility, but are you willing to enter into someone else's world? And when you think about whoever comes to mind for you, again, whether that's someone who's lost, someone who's struggling in their own relationships, someone who's struggling with their sexuality, their sexual identity, you know, are you willing to kind of step into those places? A quote by one of my old professors, Dan Allender. He just to say, if I'm to love you, I cannot love you in abstraction. I can only love you to the degree that I'm allowed and permitted to and honored to enter your story. Right? An interesting thing, Nancy works for, well, not works for, that's not the right way to say it. Works, how do I say it? She knows a woman by the name of Brene Brown. and they talk some, Brene does a lot of research, and it's interesting. I won't bore you with the research, but one of the things that's kind of coming out as she's looking at our country and all this gathering of research, she would say that, you know, we're kind of the most sordid and separated culture and society that we've ever been right now. That people are in their camps and they're sorted out. And she said, you know, very few people are working on connection outside the lines that are drawn by their side. And often we live in giant feedback loops, hearing our own thoughts about what's right and wrong bounce back to us by people, TV blogs, sermons, and books that we read. Does that make sense to you? And again, I'm not against anyone who Facebook posts, but it's always interesting to me when people are kind of yelling out their comments about political candidates or their faith or things like that. And I'm kind of like, I wonder who's listening to you. And most of the time, the people you're arguing against aren't the ones who are listening to you. It's your own crowd who's like, yeah, bring it on, right? I agree. But that's not necessarily relational access. Oftentimes, in my mind, that's often kind of being in your trench and lob at a bomb. And again, I'm okay with things we represent, what we want to say, but relational access isn't staying in a trench and lobbing a bomb. Again, it's pursuing and it's entering in. That's why I like to read books that, I don't know, maybe it would shock people in here. I like to read books that don't think like me. I like to read books that get controversial with my faith. I like to wrestle with that stuff because I want to know, you know, and enter in what's going on. Question for you. I'm going to say that I think what separates us, what often causes sorting and separation is fear. Okay? Can be other things, but oftentimes fear. And so, again, give me some feedback just for a bit. If I say to you, whoever came to your mind when you thought about who you want to have access to, how you want to connect with, are there fears that you're aware of that come to mind as you think about that? Would you be willing to share, like, what's give me some idea, what's some of the fear that pops into your mind? Yeah, just will they out and out reject me and push me away, right? Yeah, what will they think? What will they think of you?
Big pigeon.
Yes. Yeah. I was talking to Ben, our son, the other day, and in his line of work, he says, Dad, I'm almost afraid to use the words that I'm a Christian, to say that I'm a Christian, because in my context with the people that I'm working with right now, that's not a good context. And so I'm trying to figure out, how do I talk about life in a way where I'm not pigeonholed because of some label or some category and some kind of concept that locks me in? What else? Any other fears? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Generally motivated by the fear that somehow man is going to govern themselves well.
Mm-hmm.
Your idea gets traction that's where their hope is.
Yes.
It's civil government is just as much a religion as anything else.
Yes. Yeah. And you see, there's a lot of fear. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Was that a hand or was that a wave?
Me and her, I see one other, but disappointment.
Yeah.
People I think that I want access to, I guess the people that I thought of were people who would mentor me or help me understand how I can do something better. And it's like, what if they're not as great as I thought, you know?
What if I learned they're not as great as mentors as I thought? Are you thinking about anyone particular? Liz? No. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Beth Moore is one.
Yes.
I've done all of her studies. It's like, oh my gosh, I would mm-hmm. be close to her somehow. But I mean, what if, I don't know. Mm-hmm. What if you have these, obviously, yes. not good at people.
Yeah. Things, or what if they say no? Yeah, you know, I don't really have time. Yeah, a couple more, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was at that fear that they think that I think I'm better than them.
Uh-huh. Right.
So, you know, I had a buddy that was going through, he was having their fourth kid at the same time. They were getting separated and divorced, and he was in the VA hospital for suicidal thoughts and all this, and I didn't know that it was for me to reach out to him more and more and try to stay in touch with him, and I could tell him kind of closing up, and he thought I would.
Yeah. That I'm going to hold off, even though I know you got good stuff to say, y'all. But the point just simply is, yeah, are you aware of how much fear we have about wanting, you know, when we talk about relational access and wanting to engage with people and with the things that matter the most to us, we carry a lot of fear in there. And the invitation is just to be able to name the fear. The fear is real, but the invitation is to name the fear and kind of go, okay, will I let that hold me back? Or will I choose to enter in and follow places that, you know, I don't know. So humbling, being willing to enter, the third category I just want to talk about is knowing, okay? I'm just going to toss quotes at you today, I guess, but Virginia Satir is a social worker. She just says, I believe the greatest gift I can conceive of having from anyone is to be seen by them, heard by them, to be understood and be touched by them. The greatest gift I can give is to see, hear, understand, and to touch another person. And then Diane Langberg again, she just said, the incarnation suggests that if you want to lead or love, if you want to love, you must first make yourself like those you're leading. You must know their pace, their thoughts, their fears, and their needs. And so how do you know others? And I'm just going to come back to this word that, you know, I just think, we kind of throw listening around like it's like an easy thing to do, and it's just not. And so I'm going to say, you know, how do you know someone? Well, you listen and you discover. And maybe, you know, you discover places like that. That looks like a nice place to be. But you listen and you discover. Two of the biggest barriers that I see for myself and for others is, one, most of us believe we're good listeners. Raise your hand if you think you're a really good listener. Jeez. All right, we need to separate these two right here. Right. No, you see, you don't want to raise your hand now because I said most of us believe we're really good listeners. But most of us believe we're really good listeners, which is a barrier, actually. The other thing that's an issue is, you know, hearing, I'm going to say, is an act of the senses. Listening is more an act of the will. And so my question is, when we listen, and the question I ask myself, am I listening with my will? To listen. I love this quote. I like this book too. Well, I love the book too. It's called The Listening Life, but it says, servant listening is a practice of presence in which we set aside what might distract us and what we think should happen in a moment or conversation. It's an act of humility in which we acknowledge that no matter who we are listening to, we come to learn. And so the question is, when you listen or you want relational access and you're really listening, do you come to learn? Do you come to learn from the transgender person? Do you come to learn from the one who's struggling with substance abuse and issues or pornography or the one who's just struggling in a marriage? Or do you come to learn what's joyful about somebody? What gives you hope? What gives you desire? But do you come to learn? And oftentimes, we don't do a great job about that. I don't say that necessarily in a condemning way, just more in a kind of awareness way. How much do you really come to learn when you listen? And the thing that amazes me is, what I would say is that when people start talking about themselves, what you hear on the surface is rarely what's going on deepest down in the soul. It's naming something up here. but rarely is it kind of the field work of the soul. So what do I mean by that? Let me think. Okay, someone's talking about pornography. Can I go that way? Can you say pornography here? Okay, but someone's talking about pornography, right? And, oh gosh, here's this person struggling with pornography or whatever it may be in life, and it doesn't have to be struggles again, but that for an example, struggling with pornography. And I can kind of listen to that and hear what the struggle is, and then it's like, you know, either I want to jump out of that conversation because it's uncomfortable, or I might give them a directive to maybe you need to do this, this, and this with your life or get this in order. And for me, it's like, gosh, I wonder what's going on underneath that. And what are possibly the desires of the heart that maybe get played out in a wrong way, but actually may be good desires? And if I choose to listen and to learn, oftentimes what I'll discover is this is a person who's just struggling and longing for connection. I've always said I've yet to see a pornographic picture where the woman doesn't want me, right? Can I say that too?
The Lord be with you.
Wait. Wow. So it works in here, but not at home. I get it. that's funny. So the point is, though, but oftentimes if we want to listen deeply and want to learn, you discover deeper places of the soul. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, yeah, I can connect with that longing to want to be loved. I feel alone a lot in my life. And there's time I just want to be accepted or feel like it's just like relationships are just not so hard. So I get that message of pornography. Pornography is not hard, you know. Or whatever the issue is, are we willing to kind of enter in and then ask questions to know? For some people, this is helpful. I always like thinking about listening in this way. These are just four modes of listening. I can't even remember where this comes from, but I think I've talked about it one other time someplace. But four modes of listening, just for a little educational piece. Superficial, self-referential, fix it, and engage. Superficial. You ever been in a conversation, someone's listening to you, and they're like, uh-huh, yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't do that. Don't look at your spouse. Self-referential. Jed's telling me about his great vacation. Oh man, I went there too, man. Oh, that was so good. I went. You know, in fact, you know what? We went over here and we did this and this and this and this. And all of a sudden, self-referential is I'm listening and what other person's saying to me instead of learning. I'm on my own place and I'm telling them all about my life. Self-referential. Fix-it listening. We're not going to go there, women. Maybe, you know, like someone says something, or men. It's men, actually, right? Sorry, Diane. And engaged listening is the servant listening one, where you kind of go deeper levels to listen and to learn. Okay? I love this quote by Thomas Merton. If I insist on giving you my truth and never stop to receive your truth in return, then there will be no truth between us. If I insist on giving you my truth, never stop to receive your truth. There'll be no truth between us. Okay. Last category, loving. And I told Dave and Skip, this is your call too, because I'm running out of time. So you guys are gonna do a good job on loving. So I'm just got a couple slides. So humbling, entering, knowing, which by the way, humbling, entering, and knowing, I would say already is loving. but this last category of loving, I just said, love begins with courageously setting aside our personal agenda in order to humbly move into another person's world and identify with them. It begins with that. And as we identify people, and this is where I get convicted the most, if I'm really going to walk in and enter into places of people that are different than me and I struggle with, am I walking with a heart of love that truly cares for their well-being? Do I truly care for that Democrat, that Republican, that this, that that's, you know? Do I truly care for their well-being? Do I deeply hope that they'll flourish? Will I celebrate their victories? And will I mourn their setbacks? And am I willing to sacrifice and incur pain for their behalf? Am I willing to be in there and risk being pigeonholed? Am I willing to risk, you know, being looked at like an idiot, but to stay in there for their behalf? And I'll just say this. I'll just say, love is more than being nice. Another Dan Adler quote, if Christ had practiced the kind of love we're advocating nowadays, he would have lived to a ripe old age. Love certainly is patient and kind. I would say it's also disruptive, unnerving, and offending. Love risks and is willing to pierce for love's sake. And so I don't want to imply that as you enter in, we don't wrestle with people. It's not just soft love. But it's really hard to engage in deeper issues in piercing love if you have not been humble, if you have not been willing to enter in and to go to these different places and to really ask questions and to know someone deeply. It's really hard to engage, to me, in the deepest conversations of love. Make sense? And again, God can do what God wants to do. You may have to throw all these four things out the window, and God just says, here's your conversation. And it may be for them, and it may be for you, right? But just to be able to kind of think in those categories when it comes to relational access. And so, last question. I don't know, just as you thought about, like, the person who came to your mind that you want to have access to, and just thinking about humbling, entering, knowing and loving, did anything kind of strike you or make you think different about who you'd like to have access with? Just curious.
Yeah, it did for me. Probably mostly just to take more time.
Take more time.
Because that's probably the thing that prevents it most for me. Is just like feeling like I'm busy and don't have the time. Because like I know once you step into that, then it takes time.
Yeah. Yeah, if I really want to know someone, how much time does that take? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know at my work, we had to go through, they had training, and obviously the issue of approaching people and talking in situations, how much they downplay doing that for discrimination issues or getting personal with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes we have to operate within certain boundaries, right? But also, you know, will we have access? So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard that, but Tammy was talking about just narrowing down to one person sometimes is who do I want to know. So, tell you what, let me pray, and we'll call it a day, all right?